Thank you, Paul. Just a few things worth noting in terms of Australia. Fundamentally, in terms of accounting standards, it's relatively a period of calm, with the exception of some considerable focus on leases, and the dichotomy or divergence of views on leases in Australia is very similar to what has been presented to us in terms of the board's outreach activities. The users, by and large, are okay with where the board has now settled. The preparers, particularly those involved in significant property leasing, such as retailers, are less happy and are using arguments like cost-benefit in terms of the change. There tends to be a lot more focus on corporate law, the audit profession, continuous disclosure, and a real focus on improving disclosure in accounts with regard to the MD&A or the OFR, as we call it in Australia. I have been actively encouraging all of the groups that I reach out to put in a submission on the conceptual framework on the basis that once it's set in stone, this will be the framework that will exist for the next two or three decades. So don't wait until something is finalised and then complain because you don't like it. This is the opportunity to be involved. The AASB is starting to take a more proactive role in trying to lift the debate in a lot of accounting areas and is putting out a series of research papers and thought pieces on its website. They've put out one recently on the conceptual framework, which I think is quite an interesting read. And then finally, in terms of the enormous focus that various forums over the course of this calendar year have had on disclosure, one of the big four accounting firms, through their Australian office, is promoting a streamlined financial reporting document, and they're beginning to socialise that with people in the IFRS world, and it remains to be seen where that will take them, but there's a recognition that in terms of disclosure it can be improved, and I think the view in Australia, unlike what Paul has reported on in the FASAC meeting, is that there's probably too much and it's too complex, and therefore if we can simplify it, and in particular recognising that different stakeholders will want different pieces of information, certainly in terms of granularity, that as we move to a more digital form of reporting, it will be possible for companies to maybe just have a high-level report, which would be the sort of the universally available and distributed report, and then people can, through various hot links, just keep drilling down to whatever granularity they may want. But fundamentally, it's a period of calm, and I think that's not a bad thing.
Thanks, Charles. Christoph?
Yeah, two comments. One, a couple of weeks ago, actually here in this room, I attended the World Standard Setters meeting. I held a presentation on the Advisory Council, and I learned through the conversation that went around it that this was helpful. I started to explain what our council is about, and I was a bit surprised that not everyone knew about the council. So the first message I take from that, we've got to work on our marketing for the council. At the same time, I was very impressed by the meeting, by the level of the discussions that were held at that meeting, and particularly impressed by the presence of Africa in the meeting. But that was a great takeaway from me. The second one is about Europe, and only one comment was going on in Europe. In March, the European Commission asked Mr. Philip Maystadt to prepare or to be a special advisor to the Commission with regard to the EU's involvement in IFRS. Mr. Maystadt has now presented the draft report, and some people feared that the report could propose to at least partially jump off the full IFRS train, which it doesn't. It rather focuses on what actually Mr. Maystadt was asked to focus on, the EU governance on how the EU gets involved in IFRS standard setting. So it proposes different alternatives on, in particular, what the future of EFRAG should look like and how Europe get involved and how Europe should form a European position. And it we're waiting for the final report, but I'm relieved that the report didn't go away of saying we should move from a current intention of full endorsement to something like partial endorsement. So that's helpful. The proposals that are made about the future of EFRAG, they're different alternatives from making it a rather public body to taking the current and modify it slightly, and I think that's option there presented, and everyone should develop his own views on what is a preferable option. Thank you.
Thanks, Christoph. A couple of observations. I couldn't agree more on the importance of communications. Things that we might take for granted are not well understood in many parts of the world, including areas I would have thought would be quite plugged in. So I would certainly agree that there's a lot of benefit in repeating our key messages and just reminding people of who we are and our backgrounds and our diversity, because I think those of us who have, those people who have a vague awareness often think we are more technical in our orientation than we are. And I truly think as we look ahead, the role of the Council is a critical link in the IFRS organization and needs to be profiled, I think, in a way that reflects that. And I guess we'll come back to what's happening in Europe. Certainly we're paying close attention. It's always a challenge to try and figure out what's going on, but obviously a very important consideration going forward. One other observation I might make regarding attending the FASAC meeting was they announced the creation of I'm not sure if it's a directorate or a fairly senior function, the purpose being research of pre-agenda items. So they are going to build into their system a more far-sighted evaluation that looks further down the road. And I think that's something that perhaps we as a council might want. I think that's consistent with what we've been saying is, you know, we want to take the longer-term strategic view, try and get ahead of the curve. Any questions or comments before we turn to the ISB update? Liz.
Thank you, Paul. It's just really a quick sort of question for Christoph, because whereas I think that the Maystadt review came out in a very good place, and it's something we very much welcomed, first, I didn't believe there was much pre-consultation with users during the course of the development of those proposals. And secondly, I did have a concern that in the draft report that it was actually saying words to the effect that the ISB should not set standards that would have an adverse impact on financial stability. And I have a concern that that's taking the ISB into an area which is really not its remit. Its remit is to set standards which report information to the markets. It's then for prudential regulators to take action based on those numbers. And I just wondered if you had any update on how that's actually moving.
Frankly, I wasn't surprised to find that financial stability piece in the report, because the EU Commission has been promoting that strongly, I think, since the financial crisis started. So I would have been surprised if it wasn't mentioned in the report. About the consultation, I don't have insight into what official consultation Mr. Maystadt performed at all. I mean, he was asked as an advisor to look into something and provide advice. I think it wasn't necessarily planned to be a document that goes through a lot of due process. So I don't know whom he talked to, that's why it's difficult to comment whether he considered all views or not.
Any other comments or questions? All right, well then, yeah. Seeing none.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning, everybody. First, perhaps a bit of feedback on our last ASEF meeting. It was again a very good, high quality meeting with lively debate among each other. And despite there was a lot of mixed views on many issues, there was also a lot of consensus. And I continue to believe that ASEF will lead to more active engagement in our standard setting and ultimately also in a heightened sense of buy-in. The main takeaways from the last meeting was that we received broad support to promote behavioral changes to disclosures. There was support for getting some quick fixes done to IAS 1 to break the taking the box mentality. And we were actually encouraged to speed up revision of cross-cutting revision of disclosure requirements in our current standards. We had planned to do that more in the medium term, and many participants felt we could do that, take that earlier on board. There was also, in terms of, we discussed the leasing standard, there was also broad support for bringing the leases to leasing commitments to the balance sheet. However, there were clearly very mixed feelings about the proposed dual approach between type A and type B leases. That's something that we have seen more generally in our comment letters, so we'll have to take a closer look at that. Some support it, some don't. We also had an extensive discussion on conceptual framework. We've solely focused on the issue of prudence. IFREC had submitted a paper to that effect. There was clear consensus that at least we have to discuss the concept of prudence. There was also consensus that if we were to decide to re-include it in the conceptual framework, it should not lead to a systemic bias towards conservatism. Some of the members of AFS supported reintroduction clearly. Others were concerned that the reintroduction of prudence could lead to earnings management. All ASEF members thought that that should not be the case. What is really unfortunate about this discussion on prudence is, of course, what's going on in the European Parliament, which has tabled a couple of amendments, one of which says that basically we should only get money from the European Union if we reintroduce the issue of the concept of prudence, which is basically tying funding to outcome of our standard setting process. And that is something that we simply cannot accept. Highly worrisome. It almost makes it difficult for us to discuss the whole issue. For those of you who have read my speech that I gave on prudence, you will see that I have personally some sympathy for the concept, but I find it very difficult to discuss the concept as long as it tied into a political discussion that basically ties funding to outcome. And if Europe is going to do this, other parts of the world might also feel encouraged to do so, and obviously that is an unacceptable situation and it's a threat to our independence. Fortunately, it seems to me that the European Commission also realizes that this is not something that something we should wish for. The Council of Ministers, the ECOFIN, is, I think, in majority also against this amendment. There is now a trialogue going on between these three institutions. Let's hope it will have a positive outcome. This, as far as ASEF is concerned, then more specifically about leases, a couple of more comments. The comment period closed on September 13th. We received very strong support from users. Other than a very strange event in the United States where, I always forget its name, but the Investor Advisory Council of the FASB decided, just give us disclosures and we'll make up the numbers. Please don't put it in a standard. Our investors clearly say we need standards. We need it on the balance sheet. And when we did our outreach, it also became very clear why it needs to be done. Because we have discovered that there is really a very wide variety in adjustments that investors make around the world. And what we've also discovered is that there is a bias towards exaggeration of the leverage caused by leases. Their multiples are often too high, which is probably explicable because of the low interest rate environment. They should be lower. And so, ironically, to many investors, companies might look better than they expect is the case right now in terms of leverage. What is clear is that every investor does it in its own way, and our investors realize that, and they tell us, please create uniformity through the standard. So that is very interesting. Generally, I already alluded to that in my ASEF report. There are concerns about a dual approach. Some really think it reflects the economics, others are doubtful or are fearful of the complexity. That I think that's the main issue here. And there are also many concerns about the operational part of leases. And something that keeps on coming back is, do you really want us to put all these nitty-gritty contracts on the balance sheet? And I think that is something that we will have to take a close look at in our re-deliberations. So we're going to do a very good effect analysis I made sure that we are going to devote sufficient resources to it to get that done. Impairment, we achieved further progress in September, in the September board meeting. We will clarify that parts of portfolios can be transferred to lifetime losses and that it is not necessary to transfer complete portfolios to lifetime loss when there is a significant deterioration of credit risk. And that it is also not necessary to identify individual instruments within a portfolio. There were misunderstandings to that. And we have also made it clearer that forward-looking macroeconomic information needs to be used, such as unemployment indicators, loan-to-value developments, and that you cannot only rely on delinquency. In delinquency indicators such as 30 days past due. What is important is that in our field work with 15 financial institutions, that most of them relied on delinquency information in making their estimates of provisioning. On that basis, they came to the conclusion roughly, quite some divergence of a variety, but roughly that it would lead to a doubling of provisioning. I think with these adjustments to the model, which make it even more forward-looking, the level of provisioning will be a little bit higher. The FASB continues to work with a single measurement method, lifetime losses. But it is now looking at the timing of recognition. I think they seem to have decided that perhaps taking lifetime losses on the day one, at the inception of the loan, that is not such a great idea. But they are now looking at several different methods to solve this issue. One is the grossing up method, a very complicated model, it seems to me. And another one is to make an adjustment of the lifetime losses. So, very unclear at this moment where they will land. I think their advisory council told them to take some more time. We'll see how long it will take.
Maybe I'll interject there. Certainly the advisory council was questioning the urgency of the matter. They seem to be influenced heavily by other changes that are affecting especially financial institutions, regulatory, capital requirements, supervisory requirements, and simply wondering if they're going to be able to cope with the thrust of the change. You're quite right. They also indicated their willingness to consider other refinements to their methodology to avoid the day one loss problem. But I was surprised that the FASB members were very clear in their comments that their starting point is an evaluation of where they are today. And I think the incurred loss model has been interpreted and applied in the U.S. and probably in Canada in a way that isn't quite the same way it's been interpreted and applied elsewhere. And my understanding is they have empirical data that spans a number of years that looks at what their current incurred loss model is producing by way of reserves and have looked at what the ISB is proposing. And their information suggests that, on average, the ISB model would likely result in lower reserves. Now, averages are a dangerous thing because it applies unevenly across institutions. So I can sympathize with their it is very much a political dilemma. Here they are, here you are, supposedly responding to a plea from G20 and all and sundry saying we need to fix this problem, and the problem is we're not recognizing reserves soon enough. So I don't envy them if they continue towards convergence. They've got a real communications challenge.
What is the communications challenge?
The communications challenge is the industry has this data, and they have kicked the tires. They believe the data to be reliable, and they are going to face a media blitz that essentially says the standard setters caved in and have made changes that were held out to accelerate the recognition of losses, and lo and behold, are doing just the opposite. Now, the difference isn't all that dramatic, but it is lower, not higher. And even if it were neutral, I think the industry would say, why would you put us through this ordeal to accomplish more or less the same level of provision? So I'm just relaying, I was disturbed that those comments were made in public session, so they're on the record, that the good news, I thought, was a very clear comment that they don't want to throw the towel in on convergence. But that said, if you accept their analysis as correct, so the sense seemed to be they weren't wedded to a day one loss. They were simply looking for a methodology that produced the desired result, which is to get a higher loss provision in the early days. So, I was a bit disturbed by the way the sound bites were playing out, and it. I'm interested in your take. Do you think the conversation is still open, or have you thrown in the towel?
No, we have certainly not thrown in the towel, and we are determined to get this done. You could, of course, reason that if you haven't gotten it done 5 years after the outbreak of the financial crisis, you might just as well take another 5 years to finish this. But but we feel really we have to get this done, and we have to get this done soon. And I would hope that the FESB also still feels that same sense of urgency, because, quite frankly, the G20 is exasperated with us. We have worked on this for 5 years. Between the two boards, we have developed 6 different models. We now have finally a model that is both operational and that has a lot of support from our constituents. So we feel very well placed to get this done in a relatively short period of time. It is true, what is very peculiar is that both the FESB and the ISB have currently rely on an incurred loss model, which is basically the same. I don't think IAS 39 is very different from the American standard. In practice, it seems to have led, especially immediately after the financial crisis, to different outcomes. I asked my my staff, make a rough estimate, look at 2 banks that have participated in our field work and compare them with 2 American counterparts that are roughly similar. Look at 2012. And they've done so, and they indeed came to the conclusion that the level of provisioning in, let's say, our banks was much lower than those of the American banks. So it seems to be that although we have different similar standards, that there is a more aggressive practice of provisioning after the crisis in the United States. I think there can be little doubt about that. Then I asked my staff, well, overlay those numbers of our banks that participated in our fieldwork, multiply the 2012 level of provisioning by the outcome of that fieldwork. And then we got into roughly similar numbers with our American counterparts. And this was, as I indicated, the fieldwork that had been done was mainly reliant on delinquency information, and we have since made our model more forward-looking to so that banks also have to include forward-looking macroeconomic information, which should lead to an even higher level of provisioning. So I am pretty confident that the model as adjusted by the IESB will lead to a quite significant increase in level of provisioning in our financial institutions, and that concern of the Americans, which I can understand which I can understand before our further elaborations on of our model. I think those concerns are no longer justified. That being the case, in the meantime, the FESB took a different turn, is in a different model at this moment, and it is very hard for them to leave that again. So we'll have to see what they come up with. It is not clear at this moment how they will adjust their model. If these adjustments, and I hope they come soon, because we have to get our work done soon, if those lead to new perspective on convergence, we will certainly not let that go.
Well, the good news out of it is there was very strong affirmation on the part of the entire FASB board was there, saying, they want convergence. But I would come back to the communications theme that we were on earlier. How this plays out, in my judgment, it's critically important that the two boards agree the messaging.
Well, it really
is unfortunate when you hear such harsh comments being made.
Well, and I heard what was also, well, let me not say anymore.
Yeah.
Revenue recognition. Revenue recognition, I think last time I was here I told you we were done, but you should never underestimate our capabilities of reopening standards and making last-minute decisions. So we are struggling with some last hiccups around collectability, constraint, and licenses. I met Russ Golden earlier this week or last week, and we solemnly pledged that we're going to really finish the standard in October, and we should get it over and done with in our next meeting. Finally, some words on insurance. The comment period ends on the 25th of October, so 11 days from now. We are still doing a lot of outreach. I think there are two main interrelated areas of concern. First of all, complexity, especially around participatory contracts and accounting mismatches, which are interrelated. And those concerns were also echoed in our ASAF meeting. We have an intensive communication with the industry. I also met personally with leaders in the industry very recently. I think there are some promising ideas going around to solve these issues, and I am optimistic about the outcome of our deliberations. These are my introductory comments. I will be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Hans. Any questions or comments on Hans's report?
Charles. Just an observation that may or may not be relevant, but next year Australia hosts G20, and in the handover from Russia to Australia, what struck the Australian delegation was that in terms of the business recommendations that went to G20, in Russia there was a list of 180. It was a long shopping list, and the view was that nothing will come of it simply because there's too many items on the list. So the approach that Australia wants to take is to only focus on two or three or four issues that it will present to G20, and the main focus of those issues will be identifying things that will facilitate trade, particularly in goods and services, and there are a lot of roadblocks that every nation has, and also facilitate the free flow of capital. So there is an opportunity, I think, to really reinforce the benefit to international trade and therefore economic growth at a time when all nations are looking for more economic growth by having greater convergence and commitment to IFRS or converged standards of one sort or another.
Thanks, Charles. Any other comments?
Yes,
René.
Thank you, Chair. It's good to hear that you haven't given up on convergence, and also that you are considering changes to delinquency and all those definitions. So I think that's good.
Speak in the microphone, please. Okay.
But just what I want to know is there, you know, if we talk about convergence, what is the program between the ISB and FASB in working on this, or is it just let's see what comes out? And I know you're doing a lot of work, so, but as you already identified, the G20 is sort of at its end on this. Is there a program of working on this together or getting to meet each other?
Well, in my meeting with Russ Golden last week, we talked at length about where the two boards are going. In the last meeting, what we have decided is that both boards will further develop their models and then compare notes, as we have at this point too far apart to have a realistic idea of how to get together. So we decided that both boards would work on their own models further and then compare notes, and of course we look at each other continuously and talk to each other continuously and to see whether we can come closer together. I think that with the last modifications of our model, making it more forward-looking, making it less reliant on delinquency information, that we have already taken a step to give additional comfort about the level of provisioning that it should lead to. By the way, I don't think it is not our job to make standards in such a way that it leads to a certain level of provisioning. That is not how we should work. Our goal should be that it should lead to a realistic level of provisioning that reflects the economics. We feel that with our model that has its conceptual flaws, but that we've come pretty close to achieving that. At this point, the FVSB, the only thing is that is sure at this moment is that they still want to stick to a single set measurement model, but recognition of losses and provisioning, that is still far from clear. So I think they really have to make up their mind which direction they want to go, and I hope that they do also look at where we stand at this moment. But I mean, let's not beat around the bush. We are in different places at this moment. We feel we also have to think about the credibility of standard setting here. We have had 5 years, 6 models, it's decision time.
I agree with that entirely, Hans, and I guess thinking forward, to me, it wouldn't be such a huge failure if the two boards decide their starting positions are are different, and therefore from that, your bottom line decision from a cost benefit for the system as a whole, is this a step forward for the IASB? And ultimately, you've got to make that decision in the context of IFRS, and the FASB have to make it in the context of U.S. GAAP. I think it can be explained, and I do think you're at a point where time is rapidly running out on this, and it'd be a pity to lose another year or two agonizing over what ultimately, if that's the lie of the land, it's not going to change with the passage of time. Does that respond to your...
And I would hope that, I saw some reports on the meeting in the United States, and some described our model as an incurred loss model. Well, I mean, if that's the way you look at it, then obviously something that you cannot embrace. But, I mean, it is so different from what we have now. And it is so much more forward-looking. It's truly an expected loss model. So it would be helpful if they also, try to take a realistic look at what we have achieved.
Rudy.
Yeah, Paul, I just wanted to react to your comment there about it might not be such a, disaster, or I think you said a disappointment. I would say from a preparer's perspective, to have two different models, especially for the banking industry, is a very bad answer. There's enough complexity in the financial services industry as it is to have to manage. Let's face it, your global organizations are going to be working under both of these models. So notwithstanding, whether your numbers are similar or not, I would say operationally as well as managing your operations, to have two different answers at different levels within a group, or, to also, how should I put it, reduce the comparability, I would say that it's a very bad answer.
And FASAC made that. They said the number one priority is convergence. Unfortunately, they said the second is timing's not so urgent, and I don't think you would share that view.
Well, I agree with this analysis. I think it's bad because, indeed, many banks are working with will have to work with two models. I know that the Japanese FSA is very unhappy because they work with both standards in Japan, so it will lead to a lack of comparability in their own jurisdiction. It is but one thing that we will not do. We had a similar situation around the netting of derivatives. where we had a we also, just like with impairment, we started with a converged solution. Finally, the United States decided they wanted to keep current practice, which is a lot of netting, making American banks look 30% smaller than I think they are. How we compensated for that was to require preparers to basically do the two models, and if you did not net, to compensate in disclosures or through disclosures, make the two models look the same. That means a lot of work for preparers, basically doing the two models, and a lot of them have asked us, please don't do the same if you end up in different places with impairment, because it will be extremely laborious, and I sympathize with that view.
Jeff, do you have a comment?
Thank you. Good morning. Just wanted to return back, Mr. Chairman, to your comments on leases. You mentioned the FASB's Investor Advisory Committee concluding that they should not be on the balance sheets. Just for the record, I used to be co-chair of that committee, and when I was co-chair, we supported having leases on the balance sheet of assets and liabilities. So just that for the record. But two, when you look at their letter, they really make two points. One is the point that some others have made about the distinction between equipment and property leases, and at least some, or appears a majority on that committee, have some problems with that accounting distinction. And then the second one is on the disclosure package. They make a number of suggestions about improvements to disclosure, and my view of their letter is if there were some improvements in the disclosure package, that would satisfy a number of the members of the committee. Now, I can't speak for the committee members, but that seems to be a significant focus of their concerns, and if you could address some of those in the redeliberations, I think that would go a long ways. Thank you.
Jeff, just a point of clarification. The letter you're referring to, is that from the User Advisory Group?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's now called the Investor Advisory Committee of the FASB.
Because certainly that was not the recommendation coming out of the FASAC meeting earlier this month. They didn't actually express mixed views. I don't think they actually took a vote on anything, but my sense was the majority favored bringing things on balance sheet, and a majority probably favored a single model. However, there were several different views as to what the single model ought to be. But it was a more muted discussion than usually if people are truly upset, you have no trouble discerning that. This was a calmer discussion, which I, from experience, take as a vote of confidence. Sorry. Any other questions or comments? Are we ready to move on? There were a couple of other pieces here. Olivia, are we on for...
Are we going to add some stuff?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Okay, thanks. Hans has covered revenue, insurance, and leases, so I won't talk about those. I'll just make a couple of comments on some of the FI projects that weren't mentioned and then hand over to Alan. Firstly, on impairment, because I can't resist, I'll just add one other thing on the topic of convergence. I guess we've worked super, super hard since 2010 to try and reach a converged solution and haven't found one yet. And I guess the only other observation I would make was that in the comment letters that we received on our proposals, lots of people asked for convergence, although less than in the past, I'd have to say, from our side. But very few made suggestions of how convergence could be achieved. The few that did make suggestions about how we could find a converged solution between the two organisations suggested using the ISB's ED as the starting point for achieving that. And unfortunately, because the FASB so far at least have indicated that they want a single measurement method, that's not possible to use our ED as a starting point, and so that's the key problem that we're dealing with at the moment. But that's all I'll say on impairment today. Okay, now the other parts of financial instruments. At the moment, we're in the process of balloting or finalising for publication our new hedge accounting requirements for IFRS 9, so they should be published in the next month or so. In that chapter, there's also two other important changes to IFRS 9 that aren't strictly part of hedge accounting, but that we decided should go into the document to have them finalised as quickly as possible. The first of those is removing the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9, so removing the 2015 mandatory effective date, and the new mandatory effective date will be finalised once we have completed the deliberations on impairment and classification and measurement, although, if possible, we'll try and give an indication of the likely earliest application date earlier for people to help them with their planning. The other thing that's in the document that we're about to publish is accelerating the ability to use the own credit requirements in IFRS 9, so the ability, or the requirement rather, not to recognise changes in the fair value of your own debt in P&L. Previously in IFRS 9, you could only apply that change if you changed your overall classification and measurement. In IFRS 9, we've changed that decision so that now an entity could choose just to apply the change to the presentation of the own credit changes before they adopt any other parts of IFRS 9. So all of that will be included in the hedge accounting package. On classification and measurement, we've started our joint re-deliberations with the FASB. We continue those in October. I would say that it's apparent in the re-deliberations that we're coming from two different starting points. We're looking at limited amendments to IFRS 9. The FASB are clearly looking at changes from current US GAAP, and that does cause differences in views in the re-deliberations. So we may not get to identical endpoints, but I think we will still be closer than we would have been if we hadn't proposed the model that was put out for comment recently. On IFRS 9 overall, we hope that the substantive re-deliberations on impairment and classification and measurement will be finished by the end of this year, so we hope to finalise IFRS 9 in the first half of next year. Separate to IFRS 9, still on financial instruments, the discussion paper on accounting for macro hedging. At the October meeting, we plan to ask the board for permission to proceed to ballot that discussion paper, which we're hoping will be published either late this year or very early in 2014. And that was a topic that we actually discussed with the ASAF at the end of September. And that's all I'll say on the current agenda.
Good, thanks. Just a couple of things. We've started our forward planning on the ASAF meeting for December, and the main focus of at least one of those days will be conceptual framework. So I just want to mention a couple of other things that are going on there. We've started our roundtables. We had two in London last week. We're in Toronto this Friday, and then next week in Sao Paulo. So the team's very active in terms of gathering information. And I think Ian chaired the sessions last week, and they're very positive, actually, in terms of the way we put the discussion paper together. This is the most important phase, I think, because the discussion paper provides a holistic picture of the framework, and now the rubber hits the road, in a sense, of how we build up an exposure draft from here. The other thing that ASAF is proving very important for this, Hans mentioned we looked at prudence at the last meeting. The way it's shaping up, it's almost certain that we'll be discussing reliability and stewardship using EFRAG and the European Standard Setters Bulletins as a discussion point in December. The ASBJ is putting a paper together on measurement, OCI and recycling. And the AASB has sent us a paper on liabilities and the liability definition. So we're starting to see a lot of work being done by the members of ASAF, and that complements and supplements the papers that we develop ourselves. A couple of other things. We mentioned XBRL, and there are three things that have happened, some quite quickly on that. You'll have received, I think it was sent out to you last on Friday, the press release we put out, and we have decided to put together a new disclosure team, and that's merging the XBRL team with the people actually looking after the disclosure initiative. Relatedly, this is Olivier is here at the table, has decided to return to his homeland and go back to Brussels with his family. So sadly for us, it's his last meeting here, and I'm sure you'll join me in wishing him well. He's been with us for 6.5 years. It's an important step for us, I think, for the XBRL, because we have talked over the last couple of years about making sure that the taxonomy doesn't drive the way disclosures are presented by the standard setter. And putting the two teams together will help protect that. The other things that for XBRL is that in September we put an interim release out in terms of an exposure draft, and that's a first step in revising our due process. We're discussing that with the trustees this week. And the idea is that we are going to hopefully have a development of a taxonomy will mimic the development of standards, so it'll be done in phases like updates, just as we update standards. Relatedly, the SEC made its first statement for quite a long time about the IFRS taxonomy. A fairly bland statement, but that's what you expect from the SEC staff because they can't make anything too strong without asking for a full vote from the SEC commissioners. But they have asked people in the US to have a look at our taxonomy update and to consider it very carefully. And we believe it's a step towards US adopting the IFRS taxonomy for foreign filers. So that's not a commitment to do so, but it's certainly a very positive step on our part. The other thing that's happening with IFRS is that we have a paper we're discussing with the trustees this week and the XAC, that's the XBRL Advisory Council and XBRL Quality Review Team, XQRT, are both meeting in London next week. As many people know, I think they're all on six-year terms and just about all of their terms expire at the end of this year. So we have a situation where we don't have staggered terms. We have a recommendation to our trustees to basically allow those two groups to lapse in its place, a new group called ITARC, but essentially it's a new XBRL or taxonomy-focused team, and that reflects the discussions that we had here at the Council the last couple of meetings. So that's the trustees will be discussing that, I think, on Wednesday at the DPOC. And the last couple of little things around... as well as the standard setting. We've got the post-implementation review of IFRS 3, that's business combinations, has just started. We expect to have a public request for information out beginning of next year. The education initiative has been very active. You'll see from the report that in particular, as well as the IFRS for teachers and principles-based teaching, we've developed a real focus on providing examples to investors and others to try and bridge the communication gap or expectation gap we have between us and investors sometimes. And we've also been running workshops for regulators. So there's a lot of push to try and help give people a bit of a leg up in a sense to help them understand IFRS as a package and also the newer standards. And the last thing is... the research program, the board has started to see the first few outputs of the research program. Business combinations under common control came to our board last month. We expect to see discount rates in December, and equity method, we think, is another one that we'll start to develop some work on. So it's actually quite nice that FASAC is recommending that they adopt the same sort of approach that we've got, which is develop a broad research program before you actually feed stuff onto the standards level.
Thanks, Alan. Any comments, questions? Sue, coming back to IFRS 9, I've heard a number of, at previous advisory council meetings, the point's been made there's an interaction between insurance and revenue recognition, IFRS 9, a plea to sort of coordinate timing. It's easy to say, sounds appealing. It's more difficult to do without some loss of comparability. If you set a long effective date and then allow early adoption, you run the risk of having several years when some are using the standard, others not. Do you have a sense of where things are likely to land? And is that still a significant concern or has it been resolved?
I don't think it's been resolved. I think we'll hear a lot in comment letters about a call for an interaction in the timing of the mandatory effective dates of IFRS 9 and IFRS 4. The thing we've always grappled with there is obviously the timing of the two projects because IFRS 9 is further advanced, but also the fact that IFRS 4 isn't just an industry-specific standard. So there's, it's not just for insurance companies, so there's difficulties there. What we are going to try and do, though, is in looking at the classification and measurement requirements, we're going to, look at anticipating the need to potentially make changes to IFRS 9 as sort of consequential amendments to allow for interactions between the accounting for insurance contracts and IFRS 9, so we may flag that. And I think one other thing we'll look at is if we can't align the mandatory dates of the two standards, trying to at least make sure that IFRS 4 would be available for early adoption before IFRS 9 were mandatory to try and reduce the mismatch, which obviously isn't perfect, but at least it's better than no alignment at all. But obviously the timing of the two projects makes that hard to anticipate.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Jacques.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I apologize for being late this morning. I just listened to you with regard to the application date for insurance and IFRS 9. For the insurance companies, I would just add, I'm aware that you are taking this topic and this issue into consideration, but I would just add that if we had to apply at a different date on a mandatory basis the both standards, it would be very difficult for the users to understand because it would be a very big change in the one side of the balance sheet, and then due to the adoption of IFRS 9, and then a big change again, but on the liability side. I have heard that we could effectively have a possible earlier application for IFRS 4 in order to apply it at the same date as IFRS 9, assuming that IFRS 9 was mandatory before IFRS 4. But the changes on the liability side are so much important that it would be better. It would be very difficult to have an earlier application of IFRS 4. So that is what I would say.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Alan, you were covering off XBRL. I can't block Olivia's name away from that. Was there anything you wanted to add on that? Or is it sufficiently covered?
I'm not sure what I want to add here. I just want to stress on the importance of Alan said on the importance of the SEC potential move, not only with XBRL, but also for IFRS.
Thank you, and good luck.